The modern world is ugly. Our cities are a mess of glass and concrete, for the buildings made as cheap as possible. Modern interior decorating is even worse. Minimalism is king, and most newly made furniture barely lasts a year. Even the people look worse than they used to. Most Western countries now have far more overweight and obese people than healthy ones. Looking back at our history and the beautiful buildings that have survived the test of time, it makes you nostalgic for a world that's almost completely disappeared. Despite how far we've come, we can wonder if we've already seen the peak of human beauty and creativity. Was the peak really 400 years ago during the Renaissance period? And if so, why has the world become so ugly looking in most Western cities? Well, let's go straight into this global disfigurement and reveal why our modern world is just so ugly looking. Outside of the US, people have been talking for decades about a process called Americanization. For nearly a century, the US has been the premier world power in nearly every single way. Their culture has been dominant, its influence barely had any limits. Today, you'd be hard-pressed to find a town or city anywhere in the world that hasn't been colonized by American companies. Where the main central hub of every town square is a McDonald's, or the communal area is a Starbucks in Nairobi, or a Burger King in Peru. And for a lot of time, people did see this as a very good thing, which was helped along by the American media, who came to control a vast portion of the world's information. They could spread the more enviable parts of American ideology, like ideas of personal liberty, equal opportunities, and the American dream. But while the world was getting drunk on consumerism and Budweiser, they also inherited other aspects of American culture, the same ones that may have led to the world looking more ugly. Today, a lot of the hype behind Americanization and Westernization has died out. As people look around at their once beautiful towns and cities, all that's left is a bitter aftertaste. You only need to look at places like Rotterdam before and after the World Wars. Once a beautiful city just like Amsterdam, now just filled with glossy skyscrapers. And this is the same pattern throughout the West, as more and more people realize that the world just doesn't feel like it's designed for humans anymore. You can see one way this is true in the physical world around us. It literally hasn't been designed with people in mind. A year before the beginning of the First World War, Ford created the first affordable mass-produced consumer car. By the time the Second World War brought American culture to the world, it was already everywhere. In many ways, the personal car symbolizes the rise of American culture. Ideally, it's almost the definition of personal freedom and individual capability. If you own one, you can pretty much go anywhere you want, whenever you want, as long as there are roads to drive across. American towns and cities built after this period were nearly all designed with the car in mind. It's why almost every city in the US is all just centered around cars. And this perfectly complemented and enabled other American ideals. With the car, everyone could get their own slice of suburban sprawl, and their own personal car to traverse its great distances. The impact this had on the world people lived in is too massive to comprehend. With nearly everyone who works in the city living outside of the city and driving in, you need massive highways and road networks to accommodate all of the cars. Then you need millions of parking spaces as well to store the cars. The noise and air pollution that cars create also doesn't help. Cars slowly destroy the roads they drive over, so you need to make the infrastructure out of cheap replaceable materials like tarmac and concrete. In addition, they're heavy, so these are also some of the only materials you can use anyway. Pretty soon, every American city was a sea of concrete and tarmac, completely inhospitable to people. The suburban sprawl, combined with how common cars became, also made public transport an afterthought. People's homes became so spread out that it just wasn't economical for cities to bother with it. When you live miles away from the nearest bus stop or train station, there's no real option other than driving yourself. America, with all of its relatively new cities and towns, epitomizes these problems. In lots of suburban America, they don't even bother to make a sidewalk. It can literally take 5 minutes just to cross the road. You'd have to be insane to walk anywhere in a world like this. Other countries tried to keep a hold of their old way of life, but of course, this wouldn't stop car infrastructure taking root as well. Even in a world where we still made things like Gothic cathedrals and classic theaters, cars and their infrastructure would still do a lot of ruin to it. Seeing these things next to each other would just be jarring. But instead, we live in a world now where lots of our buildings match the grey functional roads we drive over. Architecture has gone through the same existential crisis that every other form of art has been through, and the results speak for themselves. Instead of beauty and virtue epitomized through architecture, we see the most cost-effective, profitable buildings spring up, that oftentimes are just hideous to look at. So then how did we go from beauty to deformity? Beginning in the 1900s, the world of architecture began stripping away its own preconceived ideas and standards. All of the old ideas, built on thousands of years of theory and culture, were thrown out to try and find a new way of doing things. One of the schools of thought that came out of this upheaval was modernism. It focused entirely on function and simple geometry, which wasn't necessarily ugly by itself. There are plenty of beautiful modernist buildings, like the Sydney Opera House for example, but these ideas unknowingly set the template for the next century of buildings. It wasn't just the modernists that were interested in function over form. film. Anyone trying to build something on a tight budget is also going to be unconcerned with how the end product looks, as long as it fits the role it was meant for, which makes a lot of sense. And this isn't really anything new, of course, as this is how nearly all buildings have been made since the dawn of time. But another development meant that modernist techniques and materials became a perfect match for these basic principles. It's a basic fact of nature that animals will generally choose the easiest, most efficient way of accomplishing a task. It's a simple calculation. Every bit of energy you save securing your next meal makes it more likely you'll have enough stored up to get the next one. And humans are the same. While it isn't a hard rule, you'll generally find that people do things in the cheapest, most efficient way they can with the resources they have access to. This principle has been essential in deciding how we've shaped the world around us throughout all of our history. Hunter-gatherers made their homes using the animals they hunted and whatever else they could get their hands on. Later on, when people started building permanent homes, the same principles came into play. They used what they had the easiest access to. Local stone and wood was the best you could hope for, as well as mud, straw, manure, or whatever else was available. Really, when we compare the buildings we used to have to what we have now, there's a massive amount of survivorship bias. The only buildings that got preserved from these times had unique characteristics compared to the rest. They were made out of stone or other materials that don't quickly degrade, or they were beautiful or important compared to other buildings, and people put the time and effort into keeping them standing. While lots of churches, cathedrals, palaces, and monuments have survived from the medieval period, the millions of mud huts and straw cottages didn't. It's only the most beautiful buildings that stood the test of time, so the past was probably a lot uglier than those buildings imply. But even with this caveat, there's still a lot more things that make our modern world much uglier than any of these previous periods of history. The city of Aberdeen in Scotland rests on a bed of granite, so most of the buildings are made of that certain kind of grey stone. Meanwhile, houses in the Cotswolds in the southwest of England are made of a unique kind of limestone common in the region. Before the modern period, everywhere was like this, and it gave places their own unique character all over the world. But this all began to change in the 20th century. Suddenly, it became cheaper nearly everywhere in the West to import materials rather than to mine or gather them locally. Even when you're literally standing on the same rocks your ancestors used to build their homes, it's still cheaper to use reinforced concrete instead. So suddenly, any developer trying to save money was relying on bricks, concrete, steel, and glass. And the result was the homogeneous, aesthetically boring world we live in. It was worse in the US, which had less architectural history to lean on compared to other countries and a greater need for new infrastructure. But today, that's almost all been completely forgotten. All human touch is gone, and the principles that guided how we changed the world around us fell away. Except, of course, for functionality and profit. Once we started making the entire world about factories, only economics mattered. Modernism took these principles and applied them to how we made buildings and cities, embodied in the American way of life. But they were just patient zero for the epidemic. These principles aren't American, they're human. It was just the Americans that got there first and spread it around. Suddenly, the only things that mattered were cutting costs while providing the bare minimum in functionality. Beauty and meaning were now afterthoughts.
The Mall of America is surviving the so-called retail apocalypse. But that's because it's less of a shopping destination than a retail-themed tourist attraction. But for malls that lack an indoor amusement park and an aquarium, the future looks much bleaker.
A great example of this is the American Mall. In their prime, malls were the foundation of America's strong consumer economy, and also just the foundation of communities. They were absolutely massive and seemingly everywhere, always giving every US citizen a taste of the good life. Their size meant that pretty much every kind of shop was in the same place. If you needed anything other than the bare essentials, the mall was the place to go. They also importantly gave people a third place to exist other than home and work. Kids were a massive part of their success, as they dragged their parents there so they could see their friends or go to the arcade. A few decades later though, and malls are dying off in their thousands. At their height of popularity in the 80s, there were over 2,500 in the US alone. By 2022, there's only 700, and it's estimated that only 150 of them will be left in a decade's time. There are tons of reasons for the sharp decline. Some of the biggest are online shopping and people just generally getting poorer. But in many ways, it's a change in culture that sealed their fate. In our world of instant access, it was doubtful that people would ever go to the mall when they could easily just get stuff delivered with the click of a button. But the experience itself of going to the mall has gotten so much worse as well, as when the profits started to dry up, the owners began cutting corners. They would rent out space to anyone who would buy it, and they didn't bother with key maintenance. The shops got worse, and the malls themselves became run down, creating a deadly spiral. Soon enough, nobody really wants to go to the mall anymore because it's falling apart and all the good shops have left. And now that there's no one going, there's no sense of community easy either. That modern design that looks so clean and stylish in the 80s just didn't age well at all, just like most modern architecture, leaving malls now looking more like dilapidated warehouses. Malls have also lost their best representatives in children. Kids stopped caring about the mall because they could get what they wanted from other places. And as nobody was going, hanging out with your friends, window shopping, and playing video games could all be done from the home, or just virtually. And once kids moved on, it was pretty much over for malls. Now, funnily enough, European malls actually haven't suffered as badly. They're much more integrated into towns and cities, and they were never really separate from the rest of life. Most malls in the UK, for example, aren't even really recognizable as malls. They're normally in the middle of towns and cities, which isn't really feasible using the American template. American malls have massive car parks, which take up miles of space. In the UK, for example, the parking is normally underground or in a multi-story building. UK malls are also generally much smaller, with a greater focus on restaurants rather than massive specialized stores. You can just walk in when you're out and about rather than having to drive 50 miles into the middle of nowhere. But an often unrecognized reason behind the death of the mall is also what's behind the death of many towns and cities in general. It's no secret that outside of the largest cities, independent businesses have been dying off in their thousands. In 2024, retail closures in the UK reached nearly 14,000. Independents were hit much harder than chains. They made up 11,000 of the closures, which is more than 80%, and it's all part of a process that's been going on for decades now. Shopping centers, high streets, malls, and retail parks all look suspiciously similar. The same process that hit malls so hard, like online shopping, have been terrible for retail profit margins. And then add in insane rent hikes, and it's surprising that more haven't shut their doors. While chain stores do feel the effects, they're obviously much larger companies, and they can spread out the pain across their stores. If one location has a rough year, it doesn't matter as much. Chains can also control overall prices much more easily, secretly colluding with competitors and squeezing the consumer when they need to. Independents obviously don't have this luxury. If the town they're in is on the decline, or if something else happens locally which impacts their foot traffic, they're pretty much doomed. They can't even charge higher prices because people won't pay them. And while you may on the surface want to save independent stores, people rarely translate those ideals into daily habits when it's just more expensive. But the result of all of this is that everywhere just looks the same. You get the same decrepit modernist buildings and the same selection of chain stores and businesses everywhere you go, and attempts to breathe new life into towns rarely ever work. Much needed redevelopment programs falter, and just everything gets covered in orange tape for a decade or so, hitting businesses even harder while construction's underway. In the best of cases, they're just treating the symptoms, not the disease. Now, it's not just the malls that are falling apart. Whole towns and cities are suffering the same fate. The worse they get, the less people want to spend time there, and it just spirals out of control. This process has killed countless communities across the US and Europe as well. Some of the largest cities where there's enough money to keep walkable open spaces which have traditional architecture have actually survived. It's why people romanticize Europe so much. But the majority of towns and cities without these advantages are falling apart massively, and the populations are feeling the effects socially too. I mean, this is a huge part of why people feel so isolated. Today, lots of towns and cities just feel oppressive, bleak, and constrictive. It can feel like you're walking through a prison, which isn't surprising considering how they're designed. In fact, modern urban planning and modern towns and cities in general borrow a lot of design ideas from prisons, with the most obvious being their recreation of the Panopticon. First popularized by the late 18th century philosopher Jeremy Bentham, the Panopticon began as an idea for a new way to make prisons. Designed to minimize the amount of guards you need, a Panopticon begins with a central guard tower. Shutters on the tower make it so that the prisoner below can't see in, but can still be watched from above. The cells and the living areas are laid out in a circle around the tower as well, making sure that wherever you are in the prison, you can always be watched. This way, you only need a few guards in the prison at any one time. Because the prisoners can't see the guards, they're always potentially being watched. The design combines both the constriction and oppression of concrete rules and steel bars, with the openness to surveillance that comes from open spaces. This design never really worked in prisons themselves. Small windows, cell doors, and other practical problems meant that it was never really feasible. But it did have a massive effect on inspiring other types of architecture, and it eventually found its way into the modernist movement and its even more oppressive offshoot, brutalism. Take the housing estates that sprung up throughout the mid-20th century in the UK. At first, they were the only route lots of people had out of the slums and into a better life. Modern amenities were combined with modernist architecture, and at first, they were actually great. Often maintained to high standards by the residents, they were great for creating thriving communities. But today, no other building shows the detrimental effects of modern architecture more clearly. First, lots of them are laid out in the Panopticon style. Large blocks of flats are positioned in circles or squares, so it feels like you're always surrounded at all times. A great example of this is the Pepys Estate in southeast London. This is oppressive all by itself, but much more so when everything else is falling apart as well. And as if that wasn't enough, modernist and brutalist architecture often used lots of overhangs. These massive concrete protrusions loom over residents as they leave their homes, making them feel even more crushed and enclosed. And brutalism puts a bunch of focus on unnatural shapes like this. Even in estates and towns which aren't literally designed like a panopticon, the effect is still there. Modern surveillance means you don't need circular courtyards and guard towers. CCT is everywhere, and the UK itself is the most surveilled country in the world, except for China. It isn't just the concrete and steel that makes the modern world feel like a prison. It's all of these other things on top of it as well. Just going into a modern shop to days like this, with cameras everywhere, guards at the door, and a cold, hostile atmosphere. And the worst part is, it's the same outside as well. We now live in a world designed to maximize profit and oppress people into compliance. And one of the worst parts about all of this is that even if there was enough money floating around to change all of this, it might only get worse. As we'll see in our last example later on, lots of money and investment often means things get even more artificial and alienating. There's a sense of inevitability with this change in the world, like it was always going to happen. It's not limited to one culture, otherwise it wouldn't have happened around the world all at once. Instead, it's because our technology and our society finally gave us the means to completely transform the world around us. We lost lots of the limits on what we could do, and the world became uglier as a result. But it doesn't have to be. Yet it did, because it changed to almost completely line up with the principles of profit and functionality above everything else. All of these awful changes we've discussed are expressions of this greed that was always within us, and it manifested itself within our cities, as it's only recently that we've become able to imprint that onto the world itself. It didn't matter that most people didn't actually believe in these profit-driven principles, or thought that this world was ugly. Those principles are just what our society rewards in people. Naturally, the power-hungry always end up with power, and societal pressures pre-selected these industrialists based on these principles, then gave them the power to change the world to suit themselves. You don't need to spend much time looking to find a perfect example of this in our modern world today. Every major city has been a victim of it, but some are more impacted than others, and at the very bottom, you have cities like Dubai. While you could make the argument that Dubai is beautiful in some sort of way, it can only ever be skin deep. Underneath the surface, they're monuments to wealth, profit, exploitation, and greed, and it's really horrifying when you actually think about this and how these buildings were made. Despite the trillions of dollars spent, Dubai just isn't beautiful. The principles behind its creation are fundamentally in opposition to beauty, and it's possibly the furthest you could get from anything natural. In fact, lots of Dubai is intentionally made to replicate the natural world. It ends up though as a warped reflection, showing both what we've lost and how futile it is to try and recreate it. Take Dubai's man-made islands. Laid out to resemble palm leaves in a map of the world, their very existence goes against the natural world. The very sand they're built on doesn't come from the surrounding area. Desert sand is too loose and would wash away too quickly. Instead, they pulled up millions of tons of sand from the bottom of the ocean to build the islands. It all exists as a gross exaggeration of the principles that made the modern world so ugly. It isn't surprising that the newest, most artificial, most profit-driven cities in the world are also the ugliest. Beauty is fundamental to living in a meaningful life. It's why people flock to Europe during the summers, just to get a glimpse of a past world that used to exist, where beauty and transcendental meaning were valued above all else. And this was reflected in the towns and cities across Europe. As beauty in lots of cases is the only thing that gives people hope to keep going. But as a society, we've given up on this completely, and now the entire world is paying the price. The deaths of so many different communities around the world is the most damaging consequence. We're living in a world that isolates us from nature and from each other. Town squares are being decimated. Places where you'd actually get to know your community and neighbors now really no longer exists. It's all just giant streets, strip malls, and fast food chains, alienating us because it isn't designed for us and we're not designed to live in this. So we of course resultantly retreat into ourselves and into the digital world, which doesn't offer us any real meaning either. And we're all paying the price for not understanding the value of beauty. But finally, we might be seeing some change though. With the fairly recent pushes for more green spaces in cities and more walkable areas, things might slightly get better. But even then, it still feels like people trying to preserve beauty are always on the defensive. They're fighting a giant war against economics, and it goes about as well as you'd expect. But as a result, this will weigh on the soul of everyone slowly and miserably. And at the end of the day, the only things that really matter are people's day-to-day lives. When something can have this much of a negative effect on them, it can't be ignored.